And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Wednesday, the 25th of October, 2023. Good morning to you. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well. This bright morning, it's a nice, bright, dry, fresh morning anyway, so far here across the Northwest. I hope it's like that for you, wherever you are. For some of you listening and or watching, it's going to be much nicer, I'm sure, if you're out far enough, so to speak. But anyway, we're going to crack on. The show lines are open. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25000, 074 91 25000, or emails to comments at highlandradio.com. So what do you want to talk about? If you want to watch the show, get on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch us on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. And we're also broadcasting live on Facebook. Facebook, what are the addresses again? Highland Hover, Highland Radio News and Sport. Okay, we have loads to get through, so let's crack on with the newspapers. And the Finn Valley Voice this morning: Halloween costumes, heed the warning, says Strabane Mayor. Halloween is dangerous. Fireworks are illegal in Donegal, but a steady flow of us across the border in late October to stock up on fireworks, some of them almost lethal enough to be classified as explosives. And it's not just fireworks, says Strabane Mayor Patricia Logue. There are dangers to children wearing fancy dress costumes if they're around fireworks, fireworks sparklers or open flames, including pumpkins with candles. It's a fair warning indeed. And also to make sure that it's CE marked, because some of the cheaper ones that you might buy online are incredibly flammable, so just be careful with that. Much more on the front of and inside the Finn Valley Voice this morning. The Irish Times today: Ireland is among the only countries in Europe not to have changed its accommodation of offering to refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine. The cabinet was told during a heated row, we're told, between ministers. Yesterday, Minister for International... Sorry, I beg your pardon. Hope it's not going to be one of those days. Yesterday, Minister for Integration Roderic O'Gorman ran into opposition from cabinet colleagues over plans which would limit state-provided accommodation for those newly arrived from Ukraine to just 90 days. Mr. O'Gorman is said to have told cabinet colleagues who asked whether Ireland would be the first to change its system that it would be, in fact, among the last to institute reforms of this type. The row, which one source described as among the most divisive, heated discussions that have taken place at cabinet since the coalition was formed, marks the emergence of an uneasy stalemate at government level over policy on Ukrainian refugees. So what would the majority of you out there believe? Do you think a 90-day limit on state-provided accommodation would suffice? Of course, that would mean... lots of people who are would be housed in hotels would be seeking accommodation elsewhere. That being said, it would inevitably, would not, slow down the flow of Ukrainian refugees into Ireland. And it was interesting to note as well that Micheál Martin recognised the fact that there is a scenario whereby those from Ukraine arriving in other European countries where they are safe then move on to Ireland. And it could be because of the accommodation, it could be because of the social welfare payments, or maybe it's just because they prefer to come here. But anyway, what do you think? Do you think there should be a 90-day limit on state-provided accommodation for Ukrainian refugees arriving into Ireland? And what do you believe the impact of that might be? There are concerns that fuel prices are set to surge again after a period of stability. The cost of petrol and diesel held steady in the last month, but the next couple of weeks could lead to fuel prices rising again, experts said. The situation in the Middle East now had oil markets on edge. The attack on Israel by Hamas and the follow-up Israeli military operations in the Gaza Strip have raised fears of a wider Middle East conflict erupting. Crude oil prices traded at 90 euro yesterday, up from around 84 on the eve of the Hamas attack. An escalation of the Middle East conflict could send burnt crude oil to more than $97 a barrel, according to Justin Doyle of Specialist Bank Investec in Dublin. We could expect Brent to rise sharply on any escalation and exceed last week's high. Following that, we would look to the high around the end of last month of $97.58 a barrel. On the downside, any further de-escalation could push Brent below $90, Mr. Dole wrote in an investor note. But we don't really get it. If it goes up, we get it. If it goes down, we don't get it, really. That's how it feels, doesn't it, at times? OK, let's go on to the mail now. The health budget won't be reopened. The budget allocation for the Department of Health will not be reopened over fears it would only create a new floor and not a ceiling for most overruns. Funding for the Department of Health increased to $22.5 billion in the budget, but the allocation means it will only sustain existing services and will not be able to progress any new measures, some of which have previously been announced. When a $1.5 billion deficit is accounted for, there'll just be €100 million for new measures under the existing funding envelope, placing increased pressure on the service to introduce cost savings. There are fears within Cabinet that the fallout from the underfunding of the health service will fuel waves of opposition political attacks. And I suppose to some extent there were opposition political attacks last night in the Dáil at around about 11:15 p.m. Deputies Padraig McLaughlin and Pierce Doherty again tried to question the health minister on the on topical issues. It's during topical issues on the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. They were upset. Now, I don't know how often ministers are in or out or what's the expectation upon them. That's to be completely honest with you. But they had initially went in last Tuesday to question the health minister on services at Letterkenny University Hospital. He was absent. So they deferred that. And had expected, I suppose, to ask him the questions last night in the Dáil. Now, Stephen Donnelly was, again, not present. And a Minister of State answered on his behalf a letter, effectively reading from a letter that's available on our website right now, which effectively said that, to paraphrase, and we've, again, invited Stephen Donnelly on the programme to discuss the issues, effectively said that, you know, lots of money has been put into the hospital, 35 extra million, though we've heard from those who used to be involved in the management of the hospital that that kind of money is only really enough to stand still and that other measures were being taken. Now, we had put that to consultants when they were on this programme and they said, yes, that's grand. There are things that are being done. We welcome that. But this does not address the fundamentals of the problems at Letterkenny University Hospital, and that's why they wanted a full external review of its workings. And I kind of got a tone from Minister Stephen Donnelly's letter, his statement, that he kind of, or what the problem probably is too many of us are going to hospital, which I really don't think there's too many go to hospital that don't need to go to hospital, and it only becomes a problem for the hospital when people are admitted to the hospital. But look at, maybe that is part of the problem. We are at a disadvantage because we can't put those questions to any government minister to respond to. So there's a bit of a vacuum here, and if it sounds like I'm being one-sided on this, it's not. It's not the case. I just simply don't have access to either our local minister or Minister Stephen Donnelly, just to put the questions as politely as I did to Tony Canavan on the issues relating to Letterkenny University Hospital. But unfortunately, I just don't have that. But anyway, that was the response, and Stephen Donnelly said that he will come to Donegal at some point in the future. Right, the Irish Daily Star tells us that Irish people are underestimating the current risks of the climate crisis, new research finds. The Environmental Protection Agency said many believe it will harm people in the future, far away, animals and plants, other people, and lastly, themselves personally. So we believe it's going to impact everybody else before it affects us. Many of us are still not seeing the immediate risks of the climate crisis and think others, like future generations, are far more threatened, according to a report. The EPA made the claim a week after towns and villages faced serious flooding due to storms and heavy rain. According to the two reports supported by the Yale Programme on Climate Change Communication, young women are more concerned about the impacts of climate change. And there's an awful lot of people out there that say, look, this is weather, it's not climate, and it rained once before, and this is just it raining again. And a lot of people go for that because it's, you know, it's a better message, isn't it? It helps us sleep at night, whether it's the truth or not. The scientists say not. The Irish Daily Mirror: Gardaí believe they saved the life of another potential victim of murderer Yosif Palani, who was in contact with a man by phone just hours before his arrest. The Irish Mirror can reveal, as do most papers, he was planning a third murder when detectives and armed officers pounced on his home in Sligo last year. The psychopath is being medically assessed in Mountjoy Prison after being caged for life this week at the Central Criminal Court. Palani murdered much-loved and popular men Aidan Moffat and Michael Snee, as well as inflicting a brutal attack on Anthony Burke, which left him blind in one eye. Sources have revealed that when Gardaí were frantically working to track down Palani, he is suspected to have been in contact with another man and attempted to meet him. And lastly, in the Irish Sun, the net is closing in on the leaders of the Kinahan cartel with top cops from Dubai in Dublin this week to discuss the Gardaí's investigation into the gang. It comes as Justice Minister Helen McEntee met with her UAE counterpart to discuss a possible extradition deal that could see the Kinahans brought back to Ireland to face a range of criminal allegations. Last month, Garda Commissioner Drew Harris flew to Dubai to meet with the Commander-in-Chief of the Dubai Police to discuss working together to clamp down on transnational crime gangs. And many would see that as the net closing ever further on the leaders of the Kinahan cartel. Across all of the papers, there's a lot of coverage, and why not, of Daniel O'Donnell. He is a class act, isn't he? He was on This Morning, which is a hugely popular show in Britain, which many of you watch, I'm sure, here. And of course, he is always quick-witted. And this is one of the exchanges that seems to have got most of the headlines today. Police in Derry City and Strabane say we're investigating a report of a suspicious approach to a child in Strabane, reported to have occurred on Friday morning, the 20th of October, at around 20 past 8. The parent of that child in question is Sean. Sean, thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. Good morning.
Can you tell us what you were told happened?
Basically, my son, he goes between myself and his mum, and in this particular day he was with his mum, and the walk from school is about 7-8 minutes long, just from Ballycomen. People don't know it in Strabane. It's a well-known route from Ballycomen down the Melmot Road past the old Adria site and to St Mary's School there. So it's about a 7-8 minute long walk, and he's been doing it for maybe just shy of a year now from last year. You know, a lot of kids do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing that on Friday morning. Now he goes to Breakfast Club in school, which is around about 8:30. So he leaves that little bit early, you know, compared to a lot of kids. And now he's very, he's autistic, so he's very kind of set about times, and he needs to be at Breakfast Club. He's got friends, and so he's been doing this wee route for nearly a year now. And so a black Jeep approached him at a little kind of intertwine between the old Adria site and the Melmot Road.
Mm-hmm.
And just asked him if he wanted to get in and wanted to lift to school, which is on the whole basis of things isn't that concerning. But then when the car went up, the Jeep went up to the top road, it then turned the opposite way off the school. A gentleman described in the 60s or 70s had a hood and a baseball cap on and glasses. And to be honest, that's about it. That's literally. Logan obviously said no, so really proud of him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't really know what more to say. We've alerted to the school for an alert out to everyone. I don't really know what to say, except for it's pretty much that. It's kind of sickening, feeling in the stomach, you know, the more I think about it.
I know. Was your son able to tell you, did he say anything other than, you know, do you want to lift to school? Did he try and entice him in any other way into the vehicle?
No, he just wound the window down, asked him, and it seemed to be very quick, and then kind of cleared.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of it, like as I say.
So he refused.
I've repeated myself about 100 times now, and it's only a very short, kind of quick
incident,
you know.
I get you, I understand that, but it's important to get it out, and fair play to you, Sean, for doing so. So it was a black Jeep. Once your son refused, the Jeep drove off towards the junction of Beachmount Avenue and Melmount Road towards Strabane Town Centre. Now, obviously, it's significant enough. Obviously, it is going to be from your perspective, but from a police perspective, that they've issued information and appeal in relation to this. They say, we appeal to anyone who was in the area and who may have noticed this vehicle around 20 past 8 or just shortly afterwards to contact police. And they're particularly keen to speak to anyone with a dash cam. And I presume that extends to CCTV or doorbell cams or whatever it might be. I think it's just important that this person is spoken to ascertain exactly what was going on here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give it too much away, but there was a major bakefield last night. and we've as I say, the police investigate. That was the police were around at my house last night, the stupid hours in the morning, because we had a good bit of a breakthrough. I don't want to give too much away, but it was just, let's just say, it wasn't quite 20 past. It was about just before, about 14 minutes past eight.
Okay.
I can say that now. And yeah, no, it's just a sickening feeling. Thank God Logan said no. As I say, he won't be going to school anytime soon on his own. It's getting darker. It's getting darker now in the morning for these school runs. As I say, it was a breakfast club he was going to, so it was a little bit quieter than usual, maybe, even though it is a big stretch of road. I think the only thing I can say is a few people have said there's been similar incidents, maybe something on Saturday and something in Omar a few days before that. Now, I don't want to get involved in hearsay, but I think the only thing I want to say for them is out there is just be extra careful with your kids. And
brilliant.
I mean, Logan certainly won't be walking to school on his own anytime soon. He'll be doing it with his cousins, or he'll be getting a lift to and from, and as I say, and just, it's just a bit, I've got a sickening feeling to think that someone could potentially be out there looking to do that, you know. And this day and age, you just don't stop and ask a child for a lift. You don't.
There's no good way to explain it away, really. And is Logan okay? I mean, obviously he did the right thing, and maybe isn't aware of the hullabaloo that's surrounding this now, or maybe he is. How is he, Sean?
He's all right. You know what, I'll be honest with you, I haven't really pressed him on it too much, because
yep,
I don't want him to. But I was on the phone to the police yesterday, and he did overhear a conversation, and I just explained to him, listen, Logan, it was one of two things. It was someone being genuine, and they were maybe of a generation that didn't think twice, which is what, you know, you always hope, don't you? You always hope it was just someone that's seen, you know, it was raining and stuff. But then I did say it could have been a really bad man type of thing, and you'd done the right thing, and, you know, emphasising how proud I am that he didn't get in. And I mean, he's sure he knows the change up now, because as I say, me and his mother and his step parents as well, we've made procedures in to make sure that he doesn't go to school on his own anytime soon anyway. And it's just, yeah,
and
it's just deeply concerning,
just,
and I'm a bit panicky, you know.
That's just the way we're going society-wise, it seems now, unfortunately, Sean. Okay, well, listen, thank you for that, and hopefully maybe the police will release any information they feel is appropriate if there's been any advances, as you've indicated, in the investigation. But for now, Sean, thank you.
No problem.
All right,
good
take
one.
Care of yourself. All right, that is Sean there. Any further info on that? 086 60 25,000. If you're listening to us from the north, of course you know, because we're texting each other back and forwards all the time. I don't need to tell you, but I shall anyway. 00353 86 60 25,000. The emailer says, this was sent last evening. What's going on with the new lights at the Polestar? I've been in a traffic backup from Remountain for over an hour. Crazy. Well, I kind of hung about yesterday just to have a look at this for myself, because do you ever see those memes on social media? And it's like, on the left, it's like how it started, how it's going. And towards the end of the show yesterday, I was like, oh, you know what? Look, they're only new. We'll give it a chance. A couple of weeks, the tweaking here and there. That was how it started. 4 hours later, I'm sat on the Remelton Road for well over an hour. It took me 2.5 hours with a toddler to get from Milford to Donegal Town. 2.5 hours, all of that, bar the 40 minutes and the 10 minutes either side, was spent in traffic. And there's no way around it, too. It just was not moving. And then people thought they were clever, and they cut up here and cut down there, and it was just chock-a-block, pure and utter gridlock. And I don't know if anyone was going home, picking children up from school, hospital appointment, if there was emergency services. And I'm genuinely, we'll wait and see. That's the approach I tried to take. But yesterday, it can't keep going like that. And coming in this morning as well, traffic backed out as far as the Clannery. I can only talk about the roads that I was on, right? So I'm not saying the lights always need to be green for me. But I put a post up just on social media to gauge what everyone else was experiencing in and around Letterkenny. And as I say again, I do understand that if you're in Inchon, if you're listening to us in Killybegs, or you're out in beautiful Dunlow or Glenties or Ardrar, or wherever you happen to be, or even the Twin Towns for that matter, which have its own traffic issues, you might be saying, oh, he's not talking about these traffic lights again. But we have to, because tens of thousands of cars were caught up in them. An awful lot of people, lots of babysitters getting calls saying, listen, can you hold on to them for another half hour? And on it goes. I'm told now it's still very slow this morning, at nearly 9:30 p.m. And it seems to have locked up yesterday at about 4 o'clock, which I'm not sure. Is that school traffic? Is that drive time? Is that when people are leaving work? I don't know. But anyway, we're going to get on to the council and see if there's any explanation. Is there further tweaking that can be done? Because once I cleared the Remelton Road, and as I say, me and Hudson got to know each other really well on that journey. But once I cleared the Polestar roundabout, I noted on the two lanes coming into Letterkenny on that side as well, that it was chocker. The traffic was back out as far as the Clanree again. Now, I don't know what it was like coming in past the ATU or in that other road, which someone will tell me. That is it the Neil? Which road is it past the council offices, Caroline? Is that the Neil T. Blaney Road? No? Past the council offices onto the roundabout? I'm terrible at this stuff. It could be. If it's not, I apologise. But anyway, you know that road. I don't know how that traffic is moving or how far it's backed up. Is it backed up as far as Currys or wherever? I don't know. I can only talk to the Remelton Road and the two lanes into it. But I don't know how it can be tweaked to accommodate that problem, but listen, maybe it will be. Any views to that? 086 60 25,000. Hi, Greg. I work on the Remelton side of Letterkenny. You finish work at 5 p.m. Usually on a bad day with traffic, it could take me 15 minutes to get home. Yesterday evening, it took me 50 minutes to get home with the traffic backed up all the way past Alcorns beside the golf course road. Unfortunately, since the traffic lights were turned on, the Polestar roundabout, this has become a frequent event. The traffic coming in from the Remelton side of the town has become a nightmare in the evenings. Again, I was sitting in it. I know a lot of people thought then, right, we'll nip up past Alcorns and we can avoid it that way. No dice. It was backed up on that road as well. So there was literally nowhere to go. And for great periods of time, it wasn't moving. And then you've got other roundabouts at that part of town that just people sit on them. They just sit on them. There's no yellow boxes. There's no traffic management. People just sit on those roundabouts. And even if there is a gap, you can't move because that gap's filled by other traffic. Anyway, if you want to talk about that a bit more, 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. A texter says, traffic back to Lurgy Brack School coming into Letterkenny. This is a joke, they say, not a funny one. Is it that far back? Wow. Morning, Greg. Traffic back as far as McDade's garage. Disgraceful in the morning, says another listener there. Why are the Irish paying €100 more to refugees than any other European country, to a country that isn't even a full member of the EU? Tell Lee those lights are actually Elon Musk's row of satellites. I'd be more interested in their purpose. Their purpose is... sorry, that's obviously a comment Lee had on their show. Their purpose is to provide internet where you can't get internet. If you are stuck up a back road that it doesn't get serviced by internet, you can get a satellite dish and he will, through his Starlink company, provide that satellite connectivity for you. Hi, Greg. I think the end game for Israel now is to raise Gaza to the ground, leave it uninhabitable and ethically cleanse the Palestinians from it for good, hunting them to Egypt or Turkey. Or just any country for that matter, then they will annex it like the Golan Heights and within a few years there'll be more than enough room for hundreds of thousands of illegal settlers to reside there. And the USA will aid them in their unconscionable malevolence, genocidal ambitions and crimes against humanity, says a listener. And just looking at some of the images of what's left, and this is only a couple of days into what they plan to do, it's shocking what's there. What's happening there. Brian Hanley is CEO of Alliance for Insurance Reform and joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning.
Right, OK. So a significant protocol is being signed in. Tell us a little bit about this and how it will benefit us, I suppose.
Sure. So the protocol signed between the Alliance for Insurance Reform and the Gardaí, and indeed Insurance Ireland and the Gardaí, on behalf of its members, will provide a new process for the reporting of suspected insurance fraud to a dedicated Garda office, which will address this. And I think what we're hoping is that this will provide for a more consistent and coordinated approach to dealing with insurance fraud claims.
And one issue of that, before you go on to, was, and this came out during one of these Oireachtas committee meetings, really the insurance industry wasn't investigating potential fraud as such. And whichever way to balance their books or for expedience or whatever it is, they were just settling or not referring as many as they possibly could to the guards. And of course, then who picks up the tabs for these payouts? It is us. Now, that's going back a couple of years now. I think, in fact, it was Deputy Piers Doherty was doing the questioning at that time. So what are they going to be compelled or expected to do going forward in that regard?
Well, I think that that's one of the big asks again today that needs to be addressed, because we do hear insurers coming out and claiming maybe as much as 20% of cases could be fraudulent or exaggerated. And yet the evidence, as you suggest, is that they're not adequately resourced. So one of the things that we're saying is they must stop settling suspect claims. It's a short term, but the long term benefit is then deprived of us and them in terms of dealing with those and sending the message that they will be challenged. And the other element, as you rightly point out, is that they need to adequately invest in their resources. I mean, if you look at last year in 2022, there were 18,000 personal injury cases for claims. And the Central Statistics Office found that there were only 98 insurance fraud cases brought.
Wow.
So there's a huge disparity. And look, like everything, I'm suggesting that the amount of insurance fraud that probably goes on is higher than that number. But I would suggest it's probably a good deal less than what the insurers are saying when they cited as yet one more reason why your premium can't come down.
Yeah, and is there transparency as to how much resources of their own the insurance companies will put into investigating this or have in the past? Because at the end of the day, A, we pick up the price, the tab, as I said earlier on, but B, realistically, the under-resourced Gardaí can end up being overburdened with, you know, every claim that's in any way suspicious being sent to them. They don't have the resources to investigate it. Is this going to slow the whole process down? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's lots of, like, really, how deep are the insurance company's pockets in signing this protocol? Because they need to be pretty deep.
I suspect that there's quite a number of insurers that don't properly investigate these claims at all. My sense is if they were doing it, they'd have told you already. And so on that basis, I think while one or two are quite active in this area and do invest resources, do challenge claims, I'd say a majority certainly don't. But and while it is an accounting exercise in some respects in the short term, and they say it's cheaper to settle, that certainly isn't a long-term solution and sends the wrong message and will cost them and us more over an extended period of time.
It's not just in car insurance too. It's, you know, defamation claims or whatever it might be as well. Right, we had this thing that sounded more like a James Bond film than anything else, the Book of Quantum. It's to be replaced by judicial guidelines. What's that about?
Yeah, so this is something that was introduced as part of, I suppose, a wholesale reform of the insurance sector in Ireland. The Book of Quantum essentially had a list of the awards for particular injuries. However, the categories were really quite broad and discretionary. And so that was replaced by the judicial guidelines in 2021, which has a far greater number of different categories and different levels of awards, which means that the injury better aligns with the award. And what we have seen is that the awards that are coming out now under the judicial guidelines are some 40% less than what they were under the Book of Quantum, which really better aligns with what you'd get in other countries as well. That comes then, you know, in addition to the reforms of PIAP, which has also brought changes. We would see, generally speaking as well, that there's 40% reduction in the volume of claims. So if you're seeing a reduction in the volume of claims and you're seeing a reduction in the size of awards, the missing piece is to see a reduction in people's premiums, whether that's public liability or otherwise. And the last piece I should mention, of course, was the recently commenced changes to the duty of care. Which again changes the insurance landscape in Ireland and makes it a much fairer plane on which to do business.
And the issue we have here, and this is why we have to stay on the backs of the insurance companies here, is because if all of this works out well, it's like turkeys voting for Christmas here, because, you know, insurance companies, there's more transparency there in terms of the money they're taking in versus what we're paying for premiums. But also, too, the Irish insurance market could look more attractive for new entrants, OK? And if you have a bit of a cozy cartel, and I don't mean that in literal terms because of the potential legal implications for it, but I mean in terms of a small group of people operating insurance in this country in a very competitive way against each other, I'm sure. You know, you could see others enter the market there. We've already seen Revolut coming in for car insurance and what have you. So, you know, I think that means we really have to make sure we're keeping the insurance companies to the pin of the collar, because everything really is in their favour not to go as far down this road as we'd like them to.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's utterly incumbent on the government to hold insurers' feet to the fire to pass on some of these savings, because the judicial guidelines weren't written solely for the benefit of insurance companies. They were written for you and I and for everybody else that's listening. So it's really important that the government does put pressure on insurers to pass on some of these savings. And you're absolutely right. It's a far more attractive insurance market in which to do business, with the reduction in the volume of claims, the changes in the law, and the reduction in the size of awards.
And the real tests here are lower premiums and more companies in the market. That's how we'll know the success here, isn't it?
They are the two key measures, increased competition and a reduction in premiums. And I think after all the changes, and it's really been a whole of society effort, whether it's the guards and this protocol or the judicial guidelines or the legislative changes supported by the opposition, you know, it's really time for them to play their part now.
And of course, we'll also have to keep an eye on convictions or cases that are being brought by Angada Shia Khan. That's another test, really, as to the enforcement of this.
Absolutely.
Because we don't really want a situation whereby the only real measure to try and reduce fraudulent claims is us talking about it and people being fearful of being caught out. The reality is, if there are genuine fraudulent claims, people have to be seen to be found responsible for that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it needs to become more socially unacceptable. I think the vast majority of us would never consider, bringing a fraudulent or a claim and so on. But I do think perhaps, you know, it needs to be that it's not accepted that we don't just let it pass, or it's OK to say, sure, isn't he grand? He's after getting a few bob for himself. That day is gone, because that impacts on your premium and mine and on the local corner shop or sporting group. So we do need to see, and it is, I appreciate there's a degree of resources that needs to be invested, but if we're paying into the medium and long term for everyone's benefit, then they do need to be investigated and we do need to cry stop.
Yeah, and we are a particularly small market, so that's why we have to be particularly, good on these things, so that the likes of your soft play area and your sports club and your festival can actually get insurance to run these events.
That's just it, exactly. We have to, and I think we have come a long way in that regard. And I think people are beginning to hear about it. And you've mentioned we have new incumbents in motor insurance coming in, including OUTsurance from South Africa. But we haven't seen anything yet in the area of public liability. And there are organisations in different sectors up and down the country crying out for cover or increased competition, so that they have more than one person to go to get a quote.
Yeah, do you have to be? Can you answer just a general insurance question? I'll put it to you and see if it's in your wheelhouse, so to speak. I got a message. It is from Revolut. I might as well say it. And it says, it said to me, apply for car insurance, right? So I was sitting watching telly and thought, right, I'll do that. And then I've never had any issue with car insurance before, getting car insurance, no claims, no points, no nothing like that there. And it come back and says, you're not eligible for a quote. Now, I can't understand why that might be. Everything's pretty normal. Now, if I contact another insurance company, I have to inform them now, even though I was just messing about my app, I actually really have to inform them that I've been declined an insurance quote. Is that something we have to be careful about?
I think that's probably something, you alluded to it in your question, it's probably something that's a little bit outside my jurisdiction, but definitely worth asking Insurance Ireland what the protocol there is, because I can't imagine if it's happened to you, I'm sure it's happened to others.
Yeah, and again, you know, as I say, I just note that when you look for a policy, they do, one of the questions they ask you is, have you been declined? And I suppose theoretically I have, but anyway. Okay, it's probably worth something checking out in case it works against me. God knows there's enough doing that already. Take care of yourself, Brian. Brian Hanley, CEO of Alliance for Insurance Reform. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, of course. Back with our next guest in studio, I believe, after these. Now, we promise to keep you up to date with any progress or otherwise in the campaign for improved services for our children and young adults. And that's what we're doing right now. Joe Corkery, Special Needs Parents Network, is back in studio with us. Joe, thanks for making yourself available. It's really appreciated.
Hi there. Thanks, Melia, for having us.
Right. So the group was formed. Representations were made and a meeting was secured and held. And at that meeting, you got a good audience. You felt you were being listened to. The HSE committed to respond within 30 days.
Yeah.
And they've done so.
They have done.
And that's why we have you back in for this update. Okay,
thanks,
so
Million.
What was the response from the HSE?
So we, at the meeting on the 16th of October with the heads of the CHO1, HSE and the TDs, we presented our report, which is the stakeholder impact of the CDNT crisis, to the audience there. And we presented four emergency interim measures.
Now, this report was... Yeah. You've created this and it was drawn from real people's experiences that were invited through the Facebook and other outlets to participate. So this was the needs, the wants and the reality of parents and caregivers of children with special needs.
Exactly.
Or additional needs.
300 responses to a survey. We also engaged with, you know, over a dozen schools just to know what their needs are, because obviously, you know, it's important for children to have therapy, to be able to access their educations. And there's some fantastic work going on in schools and they need support too. We also engage with lots of individuals that work within the HSE who can see the impact, like GPs, public health. And we also spoke with some individuals within Letterkenny Hospital who see the impact of it as well. So
the four areas then that were identified, we'll take them one at a time. The first one and its response. So
the first one was, I suppose, our most critical. So we asked for a pathway for children who need essential equipment for the HSE in the absence of any therapies. So there are a number of children around the country, a decent number of children who, you know, are in wheelchairs, who require standers, who require walkers, who require splints, essential equipment. Also, I would include in that communication devices. Children who have no voice use a communication device to communicate and you know, I suppose, communicate their needs and be able to integrate and functionally with families and friends and, you know, their schooling. So we asked for the HSE to respond to us within 1 week with a pathway for children to be able to access those equipment, because I suppose we were in a void. We had no services, and I suppose I'm a mother of a child who relies on quite a number of pieces of very expensive equipment, critical equipment, and I didn't know how to access that. And there are many like me, and you know, there are a number of complex children around the county who, you know, we spoke about in a report, who really urgently need that.
And up
pathway.
Until now, too, there were groups of not groups actually, there were individual families. Mm-hmm. Banging their heads against the wall in frustration, seeking this type of equipment, getting the same answers back, hoping that there'll be another response in 3 weeks, hoping there'll be another response in 4 weeks, and on it goes. In some cases, the children outgrowing the equipment or becoming non-functional for them or never have access to them. Again, when you've come together, this is how these things are achieved. It's brilliant in that regard. But anyway, their commitment: a senior physiotherapist will complete the reviews and adjustments of the home-based equipment for children who meet the P1 criteria for such equipment.
Yeah.
And they go on to say that CDNM and senior physiotherapists will complete this via overtime week commencing 30th of October, and it'll be carried out at Millennium Court HSE premises in Letterkenny and or the child's family home where it's not practical to bring equipment to a clinic setting.
Yeah.
That seems like a clear pathway.
That seems like a clear pathway. And I suppose it's measurable. You know, we'll see it over the next couple of weeks as to, you know, whether it is happening on the ground, which is what we really are going to measure success on. In this response from the HSE, which we received within 7 days, so, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. They also refer to the redeployment of staff from other areas where staff are in existence so that they can prioritise the highest needs.
So talk to me, how does that work? So human resources are scoping the redeployment of staff from primary care to assist with special cohorts of children identified with prioritised equipment. So what does that mean in real
terms?
Well,
I suppose we have come across a number of cases, Greg, where families have two children. One of them has a child with complex needs, for example. We'll use speech and language as an example. One of them has a child with complex needs, maybe completely nonverbal. Another child has a need which may be, you know, a slight lisp, or maybe mixing up their S's and their R's or whatever it may be. Those families are saying to us, my child who has this, you know, not the speech impediment that maybe doesn't have a huge impact on their life or their function or their education has 6 appointments between now and Christmas. My child, who is completely nonverbal and is within a CDNT team, has nothing and is getting no contact, and we have no hope of an appointment anytime within the next 12 months. And we're seeing a bit of a disconnect there. And I suppose what, as Special Needs Parents Network, we're concerned that the children who urgently receive the care with the greatest needs are not being prioritised.
And might we're not pitching that. One group against the other.
No, we're not at
but
all.
They that last time much
will
more difficult to make up as well.
And so, even if there's you know, I suppose a consistency amount between the services of primary care and the Children's Network Disability Teams, if we can see consistent level of service, that would make us very happy, you know. So that was one of our and I suppose another thing is we're doing a lot of recruitment, and you know, we see radio ads, and we're seeing, you know, the HSE are really working and stepping up on recruitment, which is fantastic to see. But we're going to need experience in the teams to support those new employees. So we feel that that will also support
And I think too, and the minister responsible stood up in the door and go, panels, I don't like panels. We need to get rid of panels, right? But we need those words, and she's very, very good, and the words resonate, right? But we need those words to actually come into reality. Okay, so you want rid of panels, we want rid of panels, but you're the one who can actually make these decisions. What are you going to do about it, right?
Yes.
We don't need sympathetic ministers or ministers of observation, and I mean this with absolute respect. We need ministers that are actually saying, right, okay, this is how we're going to do what I believe we need to do.
Yeah,
and not sort of have this constant thing, well, oh, I'm trying and I'm banging my head, I'm running out of leaving meetings and banging my head with the civil service. We don't need to hear that.
No,
we just need to hear, you know, what actually is happening and how it's going to happen.
Absolutely. How we're measuring success as a group is, you know, are our children seeing a difference on the ground? Are we getting offered supports and therapy?
Right. So we've done one area or two areas?
So we've done one area. We've done two areas. Yeah. So the first area, I will say, the HSC, what we're seeing, you know, is a real genuine collaborative effort between parents.
You can see how that might work.
And the HSC. Yeah.
You can
and
see
it's,
how
it's
that
really,
might work.
You know, and we've parent representatives in each area that are working as well towards all these goals to try and support the children within the CDNT teams. So, you know, we have to commend that effort. And, you know, I mean, this is a 2-page letter in response to our emergency measures, and we're really, really encouraged.
Okay,
by
private
that.
Therapy providers are going to be engaged.
Yes.
This is something that was talked
this
about in the studio right from the get go.
Yeah. Well, I suppose again, our intention is that children receive support and therapy as soon as possible. You know, this is a time sensitive issue for lots of children. And if the therapy can't be provided through the HSC, then maybe another delivery model needs to be assessed. And, you know, there are resources that are working out there privately. Many of them are ex-HSC employees. You know, so we need to maybe look to see, can we use those?
And the minister
avenues?
Said that she has millions upon millions of unspent money because there is issues with recruitment, and that could be recommissioned. But
Absolutely.
Again, we need to see how that money is going to get to parents and when it's going to get to parents so that they can continue with private if they need to, but also that private is made available to them. I can't believe where time is going so quickly. So what else?
The last emergency measure. Emergency measure number one, we've heard back within 7 days, and there has been a genuine attempt to, you know, to try and provide that pathway. So we're very encouraged by that. Now we need to see action on the ground. We've had 3 other emergency measures. We're waiting to hear back from them before the 24th of November. So we'll wait patiently for that. And the last emergency measure being support for schools, because there's amazing work going on in schools. Like TG Cahir were at a school in Falkara yesterday demonstrating and, you know, illustrating the amazing work going on for children in schools with very little services and support from the CDNT teams.
Yeah.
I suppose as a group, one of the things I wanted to mention as well, Greg, if it's okay with you, yesterday there was a launch within the HSC of a roadmap for service improvement for the Children's Network Disability Teams, 2023 to 2026. And I suppose there is an acknowledgement from all areas that the systems are struggling. There's over 16,000 children in this country waiting to access these teams. that are already struggling. And many children within these teams are not getting the services they need. So, you know, we're all driving in the same direction. And it's our destination, I guess, is, you know, better services for our children. Our group, we really want to see that sooner rather than later. We can't wait for recruitment. So we need to look at other options. So there's a whole cohort of parents out there listening to this, or, you know, grandparents or relatives who are thinking, gosh, I wish I could get into one of these teams because I'm sitting in no man's land. So, you know, all of this is working towards all children who need these services.
And as well as this too, they have to look at how recruitment is being done, how qualifications are being recognised, how positions are being advertised, all of that kind of stuff. So that's the back end stuff, I would say. And then this is sort of mixing and messing with the front end stuff.
That's just what you how can we get delivery of services?
Exactly, because there's a short, medium and long-term solution to this. And we're kind of talking about the short now. Now the minister has recognised what seemed to be a lot of the issues, as did the Simon Harris.
Yes.
Simon Harris, isn't it? But again, it is. We need action to back up those words. And we will give as much credit as is required here on this show
Thank you so
not
much.
Get me wrong. Right, Joe, listen, thanks for coming
and
give us an update.
Thank you very
much. Everyone's on Facebook or whatever, and it's good for them to hear it out through the radio as well, so they know what's being done. And progress is being made, and it's a cautious welcome at this point, and we'll see
very
where we go to from here.
Brilliant. Thank
all
you
right,
very much.
Joe Corkery of the Special Needs Parents Network, battling the traffic to get up to the mountaintop for a chat this morning. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after the news and obituary notices.